Hey everyone, good day. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. We're down one man. Man down, but not man down in that sense. Jason Eisengrein taking some much-needed PTO. He is currently on a cruise in Alaska, seeing all things Alaskan. And I would surmise that's probably a lot of moose and mucklucks and things of that sort. Although similar to where Wade is from in Eau Claire, summer hits Alaska July 7th, so it's perfect timing. So we're back for another great episode. I'm back with Wade McFall, retired assistant special agent in charge from the LA office of the OIG and now a member of our SIU team. He's wearing a collar. I'm wearing a collar because last week Matt and Jason had collars. Matt Kachansky, retired senior leader from OIG and the retired Northeast UPIC director. He thought we were wearing t-shirts, so he wore a t-shirt. I think we're just going to keep doing this every week. Just see where we end up.
It's going to be in line with our talk today about preparation.
It is. And I am still Eric Rubenstein, Senior Director of Litigation, Fraud, Waste, Abuse here at Advise. Today we want to talk about interviews, and we want to talk about interviewing, particularly in the SIU environment. I think it is applicable in the OIG environment, but certainly applicable in the SIU environment. We want to talk about interviewing, some kind of tips, techniques, a little bit of things to keep you going, to help to streamline some of your internal SIU processes and have something where consistency is the mantra. You know, Matt and I, when we've been talking about this for a few weeks, Matt and I were on an on-site a couple of weeks ago at a medium-sized plan, primarily in the Medicaid space. They have an SIU team of about 15 or 16 people. And we did a three-day on-site training relying upon the OIG best practices that come out of the Special Agent Basic Training Program. And we consolidated it down to about 3 days, but we spent a fair amount of time talking about interviews. We did some training on interviewing in a virtual environment over Teams or similar. We talked about telephonic interviews, then we talked about in-person interviews and the like. And, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is obviously we spent a lot of time talking about preparation and the importance of preparing for an interview. And it's not just reading some notes and kind of, you know, getting an understanding of that. But, you know, I think in the general world, in the SIU space, and particularly in the OIG space, there were a lot of assumptions that come. And Wade, you started to tell this, you know, you told us this story before we came on. And I think it's an important story, right? About, it's a combination of preparation, but it's also about assuming skill sets and what you should and shouldn't assume, right? So be generic, but tell, you know, sort of share that, you know, it kind of gets to when we're talking about consistency, and we're talking about best practices, and we're talking about having the ability to do things in a consistent manner. And that's been kind of our focus the past few weeks. But, you know, when you're talking about doing interviews, and, you know, at the OIG, we did, you know, tons of them every day, all day, you were talking to people, and the importance of that preparation, but also it's don't assume anything, right? So let's talk about that situation that you ran into.
So I was working as a contractor for another company doing some investigative work, which involved interviewing basically beneficiaries, not necessarily Medicare, but patients and beneficiaries. And I had a list of probably 10 or 12 people that I was going to interview, and I was going to be assisted by another contractor who was a retired federal law enforcement officer from a different agency. So I made the assumption that the fact that she spent a whole career, you know, doing the same type of work that I did, that she probably had some interviewing skills. So I didn't go into too much preparation, obviously not enough, but I set the boundaries as to say, like, basically I'm going to lead the interviews. So, you know, making the assumptions that all the people that I worked with in the OIG would know that means that they're going to take a secondary role, take notes, basically let me do the interview. And towards the end of it, if I missed anything, they can, you know, be taking notes and say, hey, what about this? And they can ask things at the end of the interview, not interrupt me every time I asked a question. It was like I was teeing up questions where, you know, I know what my second, third, and fourth question is going to be because I'm looking for certain information. And knowing that I'm going to ask, you know, question C in a couple minutes, she interrupted like virtually every time I asked a question and came up with my question that was, you know, down the road. So it was, I almost had to just stop the interview and say, let's just start over. We can't do it this way. It was just, it was so frustrating. And again, I made the assumption that because she spent a whole career with another agency, that I assumed that she knew the basics of interviewing, like all the OIG agents that I ever worked with knew that, you know, someone takes the lead, someone's going to be secondary. The secondary can certainly ask questions, but you kind of mess up the flow of things if you interrupt every time that I ask a question. So it was frustrating. It was like two interviews. And then we had an attorney joining us on some of them as well. And with the attorney, I just had to flat out say, okay, I'm sure you've done this before, but I've run into some situations where this is how it has to work. If you have questions, that's great. Please hold until the end. But if you interrupt constantly, it just throws the flow off. So made some assumptions that I should not have, and I should have gone into more, I guess, basic interviewing 101 with the other person interviewing with me before we started. It was just a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the challenge is that not everybody can be the lead in a dance, right? I mean, you know, someone's got to be the lead, and that is a challenge. And it oftentimes, I think, kind of lends itself to you know, if you've worked with the same people, you know, I worked with the same people for 20, 25 years. Maybe you don't need to have that conversation, but someone who's new, you know, you do. And, you know, one of the things that we really worked very hard at our SIU onsite was to create that level set and ensure that the two people that are working to do the interview together, that there was a level set as to whose responsibility was going to be what. You know, and I think one of the things that I talked a lot about, Matt, I want to go to you on this, is, you know, one of the things that I talked a lot about during the onsite that we had as part of that level set was that interviews are not like conversations, and that in a typical conversation, people, when they're speaking, there's a lot of interruption, right? It's interactive communication. And New Yorkers, I think, are the worst at this or the best at this. But, you know, when two New Yorkers are speaking, when two New Yorkers are speaking, there's a constant influx of interruption, conversation, two people speaking at the same time. And I just think it's a little bit of a cultural thing. You know, I grew up where everybody around me was speaking at the exact same time, and we were having these multitask conversations. And interviewing is not like that, right? And, you know, it becomes a skill set to sit on your mouth and let people speak and then ask their question, do the follow-up. But, you know, Matt, we learned during that three-day onsite that people did not take the preparation piece of doing the mock interviews the way that we would have probably expected them to, right? So as the level set, you know, we gave people some data and information and things that would have been actionable during the mock interviews. And our mock interviews were conducted over Teams, telephone, and in person. We wanted the attendees to have everything. And you and I were both role players. And I found very quickly in my interviews that people did not take the time to have enough of a command of the information to ask the really poignant questions. You found that as well, right? I mean, preparation really is key.
Yeah. And that's in any training I've done on interviewing, it's, you know, preparation. It's know who you're talking to, know what information they may have that's going to, you know, move your case forward. Understand the information you have about them and how to use that information to get more. Learn something about them personally to perhaps build up some rapport beforehand to try and get at least a modicum of a conversation going, rather than them feeling like it's a confrontational type of thing. And we saw very little of that. You know, it was a very rushed and compact training regimen that we had, but there was none of that. It was, you know, hello, I'm so-and-so, and they just start bolting out questions. And at one point, I was going to give them some information, and they interrupted me. And so I stopped. And so there's, you know, and I think they learned a lot from it. But, you know, in doing interviews, you've got to learn what information is it that that person has. And even before the interview starts, what's the best way to get it from them? And you're only going to do that through preparing, you know, your information, how to get it, what information do you, can you gather about the person, and then use that during the course of the interview to make the person at ease, and then build the rapport and pull out the information that that you need.
And yeah, I mean, look, you know, interviews are, I think, a lot more art than science. And we have all been through some of the professional interviewing schools. You know, they do it at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, and then, you know, OIG's rolled out a couple of them, you know, some of these 3 and 4 day training programs that I think have great applicability to some types of interviewing situations, but maybe not as applicable to others. But, you know, there's, I think that, you know, the interesting point you're making, you know, is that we spent some time talking about how do you build rapport with someone on Teams or on the telephone, you know, and I gave like some of the examples I gave, and I'll use them as actionable here is, you know, we do Teams meetings incessantly. And oftentimes a Teams meeting, people have a background like yours, Matt, the blurred background. You know, if I was looking to do an interview with you and you were on a blurred background, I might make light of that and say, you know, it's odd. Everybody I interview, we're all in the same room. No matter where I'm doing the interview, they all seem to be in the same room. Or wait, it's unbelievable how your office must be a Regis office. It's the same as everybody I talk to. Or more importantly, in your background, I see you've got what looks to be a fern. I'm guessing you have two of them. And so it's like, oh, between the ferns, right? So, you know, there's some silly things. It, in the big picture, is it stupid? Is it silly? Absolutely. But, you know, in some cases, you've got to kind of just have, you know, a little bit of a rapport builder, something, you know, something that's easy. You know, I mean, if I'm interviewing Wade McFall for the first time and I see that he's in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, maybe I'm going to ask him something about, oh my God, like, where is Eau Claire, Wisconsin? Or, you know, oh, Matt, you're in the Baltimore area. I hear the Inner Harbor is collapsing, you know, like, tell me something about it, right? Like, it's just a way to do it. So there are ways that you can establish some rapport with someone in a non-in-person environment, right? I mean, in person, for someone that I've never met, I go to their house, I'm likely going to make a comment about something about their house or something like that. So why wouldn't you do it, you know, in that same scenario? But, you know, so let's go back. Wade, I want to go back. So, you know, preparation becomes key. And I don't want to give away the secret sauce of what we teach in our 3-day training, because we really do, you know, over the 3 days, it punctuates with this practical where we kind of bring investigative planning, interviewing, policy review, data review. We bring it all together. And while we only have a few hours, we try to capitalize on those few hours. But, you know, it really does beg the question of preparation. And so the question really goes back to when you were doing this interview with this other person, was she as well prepared as she could have been? Because, you know, would she have been asking those questions knowing that you are likely going to ask those questions because you're the lead person, you're clearly the one that's most prepared, right? So, you know, preparation goes both ways.
Yeah, and I think too, part of it was probably that she was from, let's see if I can put this correctly without sounding terrible, but she's from an agency that thinks that they're the end all. So, and she knew my history, where I came from. So I think she probably thought that I was less skilled at interviewing than she was. I'm not saying maybe if she was the lead, she would have been a great interviewer. But just the fact that she didn't know her place in the interview was kind of,
right.
You know, and it wasn't like it was more of a, I kind of look at interviews as two different categories. One is just general information gathering. If you're talking to, you know, a patient, a Benny, something like that, a member of a HMO or whatever, where you're really just trying to help them remember things. You're trying to elicit information from them, as opposed to, you know, a subject interview, a confrontational interview, where you're trying to get somebody to admit to certain things. And in that case, in the second case, I think you need even more preparation than just a general information gathering, because you need to know everything you can about this situation, the investigation, and you have to ask your questions in such a manner that they realize at some point they're like, oh, this guy knows, like the game is up. This guy knows what's going on. So there's even right. more preparation, I feel, if it's going to be like a confrontational where maybe you're going to be bluffing a little bit. A lot of times we would do interviews when we arrested a couple people who were involved in, and it's like on TV, but one of the subjects is in the room next door and you're using that to try and elicit information from his partner or her partner. Right. So you can bluff, but you can't bluff to the point that you're saying things that he knows are blatantly untrue. You have to throw out things. You have to give him a little bit of information at a time so he knows that you are on your game and you know what's right. going on. So in that case, you know, going back, I guess, to your question, the other person may have been a fine interview, but again, just in that spot I had done, and it wasn't a confrontational interview, but I did have questions that I was leading up to. And if she knew that, she probably would have maybe stayed right. in her lane a little bit better than she did.
Yeah, you know, one of the things is that, you know, we're doing these SIU trainings and we try to explain to people, you're not law enforcement, so these aren't really interrogations. These are like, let them bury themselves. Let them provide a statement that's not going to be correct. And, you know, you're not there to be confrontational. You're not law enforcement. You're not prepared for a confrontational interview. You're not prepared to call someone out for lying and then have it become confrontational, because you don't know, you know, how people are going to react or how they're going to act. I do think it's interesting because, you know, one of the things that you talked about is what I would almost consider to be a barrier, which is this expectation that your partner has, that you think that they're going, you know, when someone thinks that they're the end all be all, is that a barrier to the interview? And in our interviewing training block, we talk a lot about barriers to getting information from people. And one of the things is that if you're dealing with someone who's maybe a stronger personality, you know, I always think that regardless of how A-type I am as a New Yorker, if I was interviewing someone from another part of the country who wasn't a New Yorker, you really have to dial that back, right? I mean, being a good interviewer is almost like being a professional comedian. It's reading the room, right? It's being able to know who your audience is. You know, you got to know who you're talking to before you talk to them. So, you know, the two things that you bring up, which are really important pieces, which is really the barrier to the interview, could be internal. It doesn't necessarily mean because it's on the telephone or it's on video. The barrier to your interviewing success could be the person sitting to your right, you know, or to your left. And so, Matt, I want to kind of close this out on this whole premise of expectations, right? I think that from my perspective, and I certainly want to get your final thought on this, is from my perspective, an SIU investigator should not go with the expectation that the person that they're interviewing, if it's the provider, is going to throw their arms up and say, "You got me. I billed for $1 billion that I shouldn't have paid, you know, gotten paid." You know, the expectation is that they're probably going to not tell you a truthful statement, but, you know, you're there to just get the information, right? So those expectations have to be measured.
Right. Yeah. You have the information that you have. You have your set of facts. What you're asking the provider to give you is, you know, what's their side of the story? How do they explain what's going on in their office and how they do their billing or whatever, and let them give you that. And then it's up to your job as an investigator, not at that point necessarily, but in the aftermath of the interviews, to say, here's what they said. Here's the information I have. How do they differ? How are they the same? And then based on that, what are the next steps in the investigation that I need to take to either corroborate further what the provider told me or validate that what they said isn't true? And to build that better right. case.
Right. And those statements that a provider may make that may not be accurate, you know, that's information that could be put into a law enforcement referral, right? We do, as part of our 3-day training, we do the creation of a good referral to law enforcement and preparing that. That's a good piece of information. If the SIU is looking to refer the provider internally, through the process of maybe putting the provider on prepay or some administrative action, termination or something like that. Something that's not an accurate statement is certainly going to help with, you know, kind of making the case. So, you know, there's a ton to unpack when you're talking about interviewing. You know, our block was probably about 60 or 90 minutes. And it really could have been a half a day. I mean, we found a lot of opportunities with our attendees where truthfully there could have been, you know, hours more of role playing and scenario development and sort of how the case preparation and management of your case really rolls into the interviews and that process. So it really, it's an ongoing thing. You know, I know when I talk to people here at Advise, when I do interviews, I learn something about my interviewing technique or my skill set. And that's interviewing people for jobs. It's interviewing providers that I'm doing work for with law firms and things of that sort. It's an evolving process. And I think anybody who takes their interviewing skills and says, these are the best that they're ever going to be, you could always learn something from the people that you're doing interviews with. And that works for anything in training, right? Good and bad. If you take bad training, and this is what not to do. And if you, you know, pick up on a technique that somebody is using in an interview and it's not a good technique, maybe you go back and say, am I doing that as well? Or, you know, it helps to recalibrate, right? It's a good level set. So food for thought.
And I will say in the 3 days of training, I think they got the most out of those interviewing blocks, the actual practical exercise. I think they learned a great deal in just doing them, even though they were somewhat hokey and somewhat contrived. I think they learned quite a bit on how to approach the interviewing process.
You know, and what I found, and I want to leave it this, is what I thought was really interesting to me was the level of nervousness,
yeah,
or the lack of confidence that the people in the room had. And some of them had been doing interviews and whatever for years and years and years. And I just thought it was interesting how nervous people were during what was really a friendly 3-day training and a practical. So, you know, there is something to be said about creating artificial stressors to, yeah, you know, to get people going in the direction they need to be. So ongoing conversations as they all are, right? So Wade, Matt, as always, good to see you guys. I'll be sending out an email to provide what the appropriate uniform of next week will be, so that we're all,
and one of us will violate it.
And there'll surely be a violation. So as always, thanks again for tuning in to the OIG Roundtable Podcast. We've got a great LinkedIn Live coming up next week. Eli Rushbanks, the general counsel, in-house counsel for $4, an amazing, amazing charity. They crush hospital bills. We're going to talk about things like charity care, disproportionate share hospital payments, which is really what charity care is. That's the technical name. We're going to talk about the intersection of those things with fraud, waste, and abuse. We got some great stuff lined up, as well as our weekly podcast. We've got a number of great LinkedIn Lives coming up. We'll be rolling out in August and September. We've got a great lineup there. And again, if you're not getting our newsletter, feel free to reach out to us at hello@advizehealth.com. And you can get our newsletter, get our podcast. You can catch them all, obviously, on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. You can subscribe to that as well. So as always, gents, good seeing you. Hope your July 4th was good. Everybody have a good week, and we'll see you on the next podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you all.